How have you not seen this?
Welcome back to the podcast. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today, I'm joined by my special guest co-host, Ry Silverman.
Hello.
And our guest, Lauren Benkes.
Hey.
And today, we watched Three Amigos, a comedy starring Steve Martin, Chevy Chase, Martin Short, kind of a comedy supergroup things. Lorne Michaels, Steve Martin, and Randy Newman wrote the script. John Landis, acclaimed director, Animal House, Blues Brothers, American Werewolf in London, Trading Places, the list goes on. Great comedic team behind this movie. I'm going to turn it over. Let Ry say a couple of things about here since he's guest hosting the movie with me.
It's one of the movies that I was... It's very much an influence on me being a comedian. Mm-hmm. I think it's basically started my lifelong love affair with the work of Steven Martin. And it definitely... It's the movie that I remember seeing at the earliest. It's the earliest memory I have of seeing a movie. And it was on HBO. And I remember being on my parents' TV in the living room and watching it and just loving it. And I'm not even getting it at the time, but really just thinking it was a really funny movie because the slapstick and the silliness of it works even if you don't get a lot of the more subtle and adult level jokes. Mm-hmm. So it's really good.
Cool. So knowing all of those really great things about this movie, Lauren, how have you not seen this?
I remember, as we talked about other movies...
Your farty
podcast,
brother?
Yeah, my farty... Well, this one, he did not fart on me for this movie. but I remember probably, taking naps in between my dad and brother watching sports. And then they would watch movies like this and laugh. And I would be like, I have no idea what's going on. I'll go back to sleep.
So, which is fitting to tonight because you fell asleep.
I did.
You have a Pavlovian dog response to Three Amigos.
What's that? Steve Martin and Randy Newman soundtrack?
Lulls me right to bed every
population
time.
Ben Cat.
Well, to be fair, the movie does have a lullaby in it.
Yeah. Blue Shadows.
Was I awake for those?
Yes, that was the desert scene with the...
that was my favorite. Yeah. It was any time you can work talking animals into a movie, yep. I'm on board.
Yeah,
that scene is so ridiculous. Let's start off, let's talk about that scene. Blue Shadows scene. Again, one of the three actual songs that appears in the movie, written by Randy Newman. The score, of course, is done by Elmer Bernstein, who did the Ghostbusters score and many other really great film scores. And they're on clearly what is a matte backdrop. It's a set. They don't even attempt to make it like a desert.
that was pretty cool.
And then just all these animals start coming out of the woodwork to just hang out. Like a mountain lion wanders in at one point. And its reaction isn't murder, it's, what's Chevy Chase playing on the guitar over there?
Oh. Some good tunes happening over there. No one told me it was a party.
What's that soothing, manly voice I hear? Why, it's Martin Short.
Yep. And then, of course, the horses vocalizing.
It's just any time they do those kinds of scenes where they have animals singing along together, since I work with animals, I always think, you would never find any of these animals just chilling out together.
Yeah.
Way to ruin the movie magic.
Maybe that's why I
Now you're going to tell me that tortoises don't talk either.
Yeah. I'm glad that you did recognize that it was a tortoise instead of a turtle.
Yep, you corrected us on that.
Thank you.
The tortoise and his salutations of goodnight, Ned.
When you guys laughed as hard as you did at that, it made me so happy because it's one of those things from as a child. Something about that moment is so magical. And, you're watching it, is this going to hold up as an adult? And it does.
That joke holds up. And the other thing I love, this movie, it spends most of its time steeped in some level of reality.
Yeah.
And then there's that 20-minute stretch with the Blue Shadows scene and the singing bush and the invisible swordsman.
It's
insane.
But, yeah.
It takes a ridiculous detour.
It does.
I think it's one of those things where you really couldn't get away with doing that nowadays, where you couldn't make a movie that suddenly has a totally different reality back to the old reality
again. They want to do so many things. They want to have kind of a straightforward comedy / western type thing, but then they also want to work in elements of a fantasy quest type thing as well.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you get Randy Newman as the singing Push, which is one of the best things in the world.
Yeah.
And then Chevy Chase's character, Dusty Bottom, shooting the invisible.
That is one of the greatest things that ever happened in any movie ever. It's just such a ridiculous, it's such a dumb thing to set up.
Yeah.
That the invisible swordsman will appear and point the way to, like, why is El Guapo's, like, mission suddenly, like, there's a secret?
Yeah, like, there's some magic quality. And then they get there, it's like, oh, it's just a shitty abandoned fort.
Well, it was a mission.
Oh, a mission, sorry.
As we know, because in the film, when El Guapo was talking to his men about the battles they had, he goes, you and I beat the priests of this mission.
Yes, yes.
So, like, that's where their factory, they defeated the holy men who were working the commission.
They beat up the holy men, and they raped the horses and pruned the hedges.
And they rode off on the women.
Yeah. I want to talk about this before I forget about it. The general plot of this movie clearly kind of a riff on Seven Samurai, where a group of warriors are contacted outside of the village and brought in.
Yeah.
Later, of course, remade as Magnificent Seven, but then kind of turned on its ear with this,
mm-hmm.
Where it's these people who are perceived as warriors, and
yeah.
they're completely out of their element, which, and then, of course, this goes on to inspire something like Bug's Life and Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's that same general idea. And those
also,
are all
also
great
called
movies
is,
as well.
What's the Ben Stiller one? Tropic Thunder.
Oh, yeah.
Where the actors
yeah.
are forced to be put into their actual
yeah,
movie. Yeah,
absolutely.
The more you do this podcast, the more I realize there's a lot of movies I haven't seen.
Yeah.
You should start just, like, making up movie names to see if she'll act like it's something she's heard of.
Probably not. I'd probably just play along, though.
You can probably play a game with her, like, name three movie titles and, like, is this a real movie or is it not a real movie?
Two Lies and a Truth.
Yes.
Drop Dead Fred, movie or not a movie?
I've seen that one. I've
yeah,
seen,
that's
yeah,
it.
I've
that's
actually,
it. Like, I refuse to believe that you have not seen
yeah.
Drop Dead Fred.
I've seen all the weird ones,
yeah.
but I haven't.
You've seen Drop Dead Fred and Angus.
Yeah, I don't remember if I've seen Angus, but...
Angus is out there. It's a weird movie.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
Seen some good Benny and June.
Angus was more known for, I think, its crazy alternative band compilation
yeah,
soundtrack
yeah.
than anything
for
else.
Having the Green Day B-side on the soundtrack.
Yeah,
yeah.
But sorry to... from three
no,
Amigos.
No, no, not, no, not right. at all. I mean, part of the whole the thing of this podcast is we can talk about other things as it relates to
well,
it.
Really, if any of those movies, if at any point liberty is in peril, like, they'll be there.
Exactly.
And if whatever there is injustice, you'll find them.
Yeah, Cloverfield Monster rolls in, bam, Three Amigos is there. They decapitated liberty.
Yeah, yeah.
I would love that.
Well, you know what? If they had actually dressed up all of New York like Amigos and had them jump out from behind buildings, the
yeah.
monster might not have attacked New York.
Yeah, this would have taken off. Lizzie Kaplan would still be with us. It's an unfortunate turn of events.
I guess, well, that's beautiful.
Yeah. For those of you listening, I just crossed myself. I just watched Mean Girls this past week in honor of
the
10th anniversary.
Yeah, 10th anniversary.
Right, rewatched. I mean, I hadn't seen it in theaters because I'm like, goddamn American.
Yeah.
Something that I was like, I forget you can swear on podcast all the
yeah,
time.
All
I actually hesitated. I'm like, God.
Yeah, the FCC has no jurisdiction on Podomatic.com.
Oh, but that podcast troll, he's coming. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, like, I liked the beginning setup of how they were at the movie studio,
mm-hmm.
and the producer gets so pissed off, and then he just takes their clothes,
yeah.
but he leaves them with hats,
yeah.
and the garters, and socks.
And their long underwear.
Right, yeah. and their long underwear. What up with that?
Well, I mean, you can't have actors walking around on Fugelman Studios waving their dongs.
Yeah.
Hanging a little brain.
Yeah, no brain hanging on.
Nobody wants that underwear back. I like to believe that the Migos are actually also Mormon.
Yeah.
And that the long underwear they're wearing is actually that, like, second skin they have to wear.
That makes
sense.
I
would love that. I actually looked into getting some Mormon underwear for myself. But I found out you have to have a special code.
What?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's
special
that's
Mormon
insane.
Code.
It's
probably on, like, one of the pages of the Book of Mormon. It's probably just in there somewhere.
Yeah, you gotta dig for
it's
it.
It's like you just do Larry, where you used to have to have the instruction book so they prove that you had the
go.
Actual.
Yeah.
Like, you had. Well, what it was is for them to prove that you bought the game and didn't bootleg it.
Yeah.
You would go to page 6 and put in this detail, and you would have to do that. And then if you didn't have that, but then people would just figure it out. To write down all the questions, and they just make a
yeah,
document that had the answers to the questions.
One of the things we're talking about when we're talking about the producers.
Yeah.
The Movio executives.
Yeah.
Kind of like a best of Simpsons recurring characters.
Yeah.
You've got Joe Montana, who does Fat Tony. John Lovitz, who does Artie Zimmerman. Or is it Zimmer?
Artie Zip.
That's what it was. And then, of course, Phil Hartman, who was countless characters. Yeah.
Lovitz, too. Lovitz plays a lot of characters.
Yeah. And it's just, like, that's insane to see them in that context, especially because Lovitz and Hartman, at the time since Lorne Michaels was involved, they would have been SNL cast at this point.
Yeah.
So that was really cool to see them in a Lorne Michaels movie.
There's a lot of that where if you watch, like, Lorne Michaels and SNL, like, like, you'll see these guys that were later on, like, cast members. But, like, if there's something I remember watching, like, Mike Myers or some random guy in the background or whatever.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff.
Well, like, Coneheads, because David Spade and Phil Hartman are in that.
Yeah.
I do really like that movie.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Yeah, there's several. Like, Chris Farley popped up, like, in Wayne's World 2. So, yeah, all over the place. And I think in this movie, like, Steve Martin was the only main cast who was never an SNL cast member.
Yeah.
Like, Martin Short and Chevy Chase were cast members at one point.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting to see that, like, a non-SNL property, but have so much SNL backing behind
it. And even Martin, even though he wasn't a cast member, he was, like, a go-to host for a while.
Yeah. So he was just kind of like,
Yeah. Because there's that great episode of it. There's actually a Saturday Night Live where Nick Nolte was supposed to host, and then he couldn't. And Eddie Murphy, who at the time was a cast member, he hosted the show instead because they co-starred in 48 Hours together.
Mm-hmm.
And so then at the very end of the episode, Steve Martin comes running in like, I was at home! You could have called me! Like, what are you doing?
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
We have to talk about Alfonso Arau, who was the villain of Guapo.
Yeah.
Okay,
maybe the best character in the entire movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Besides Hefe.
Yeah.
Oh, Hefe was great too. And I know I mentioned this while we were watching it. I have seen Alfonso Arau in one other movie, and it was Romancing the Stone with Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. Yeah. So is it like
it's pronounced Bachman? Bachman Turner.
But God, yeah, he has so many great lines. And he's just so naturally funny. And I like the first scene we see him in is after the amigos have chased a couple of his flunkies out of town.
Yeah.
And we find out he's an amateur photographer.
Right. Yeah,
that's
what
he's setting up this photo.
Like, there's an elaborate recreation of like this Eastern inspired thing.
And no explanation as to why he's doing it.
Right.
And never comes back for any reason.
Just taking photos on his day off.
Man, this guy's a real scumbag bad guy, but wow, what refined taste he had. Like, this guy is a Mexican Bond villain.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of like what comes across.
Damn, El Guapo, your photographs be banging.
It's little stuff like that, like the fact that his henchmen all got together and raised money for his birthday.
Yeah,
and they got him a sweater.
The way he ties it over his shoulder
like
a tennis player,
an 80s villain. It's so great.
Can we please talk about the scene where El Jefe and El Guapo are talking? And it's like they're getting ready for their birthday.
Yes, the plethora.
One of the greatest lines of all time.
Yeah, I think you do it best, right?
I feel like me doing it on microphone sounds so racist. No, like, let's get it out of the way. This movie is very racist.
The entire conceit of this movie is that Mexicans don't know what movies are. That's what this entire movie hinges on.
Yeah.
That Mexico is dumb. that's what it is. That's insane.
But there's just that great, it's one of my go-to favorite exchanges in all of cinema. and anytime somebody says the word plethora, what is a plethora? And like, what is that? I would not want to think that someone would tell me that I have a plethora. And then it's like the whole back and forth. And forget what is it? I know that I, Hefe, am not as smart and learned as you are, but perhaps you are lashing out at me and something else.
Maybe because you're turning 40.
Yeah, I love a line later where he's like, he's turning
33! Yeah, they're just like, even El Jefe, or even El Guapo's vain.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I used to be someone who had, like, this whole movie memorized, and I could say it, like, line by line. Now I have to kind of paraphrase it more, but yeah. I love at the end, the big speech. It's one of the greatest inspirational speeches at the end of any movie, where he's just like, for some of us, shyness is our Guapo. Yeah. For others, and, like, was it, like, overeating or something like that? And he's like, in our case, El Guapo's a very angry man that actually wants to come and kill us. And then we have to fire our personal El Guapo, pause, which happens to actually be the actual El Guapo.
For those of you who are not, like, have any Spanish classes at all, El Guapo means the handsome, and El Guapo is not El Guapo.
What are you talking about?
I thought
about?
He was very attractive.
I wanted to marry him, Dustin.
He is a very rugged, harsh... Mm. He's very haggard.
Sounds handsome to me.
He's all right. He's not traditional Guapo.
He can be my El Jefe.
As not Guapo's fish him out.
He's what shitty people who think they're complimenting somebody when they say it refer to as unconventionally El Guapo.
Oh.
No.
I'm so bad for El Guapo now.
I'm saying this is society, man. Society says El Guapo's not El Guapo.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a real actor that played that character.
Alfonso Arau, I know. I learned his name.
You're insulting
his
looks
right here.
What if he
listens to this?
Yeah. What if he's like Googling, he has a Google alert with Three Amigos, because why wouldn't you?
Right.
And he's like, oh my god, these guys are really into El Guapo. Finally, I can shine and see how. Oh my god, what are they saying about me?
Look, I will say this.
He's going to turn to Jefe, and he's going to lash out at the actor who played Jefe about saying plethora again.
I will say this.
Forgive me, El Guapo. Perhaps you are angry at something. Maybe the fact that Dustin Meadows is about you on a podcast.
I will say this.
Remember that one guy did an awful Mexican accent while he was doing it?
I respect the shit out of Alfonso Arau in this movie. If he listens to this podcast, I will personally apologize to him.
Will you kiss his hand and tell him he is El Guapo?
Would you not? Of course I would.
I would kiss it right now.
Would you regale him with stories about the time that you guys robbed the village?
Right.
Yeah. Pruned the horses and rode off in the wind.
Yeah.
Pruned the hedges of many small villages.
Yep. My favorite scenes, the My Little Buttercup scene.
Oh, God.
That's really good.
They set up that these guys are badasses, and then they come in to use what would have been the parlance of those times, are a bunch of dandies at first glance. And then they do this very clearly, repeatedly practiced and choreographed musical number, and these rough and tumble guys in the bar are terrified of them.
It's so funny to me how much when I was a kid I didn't get that scene, and I just learned the song, and I would, like, dance. My cousin and I would dance
like,
that
little
song.
Kicks and everything.
Yeah, my little buttercup has the sweetest smile.
And then when they just keep throwing the lines to the bartender. My little buttercup.
That look, and like, I love that all the guys like, smile!
Yeah, it's so scared, it's so good.
Yeah, oh.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
That's about it.
So it goes from ridiculous to crazy, and then we thought they were going to get serious for a moment.
Yep.
When they were talking about Carmen.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that.
And Jefe was like, why are you, when you want a woman, you just take a woman.
Yep.
And then El Guapo was like, no, women are like flowers. You must wait for her to bloom.
To open her petals.
And then he just smashes that beautiful moment that they're building with.
When was she open for you?
Right. Yeah. And he's like, tonight or I'm going to murder.
Yeah.
El Guapo on rape culture.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
That's what that, like, that 10 seconds is.
This movie came out in 1980, so it's like, it's pretty progressive.
Like, it's like, El Guapo almost, like swings for the fences on that really great thing.
He was stealing my heart.
Yeah.
I was planning our wedding and our life together.
But then murder. I mean,
and then
picture.
Murder. I was like, I'll open my petals for you, El Guapo. And then my flower closed.
God damn it.
And then El Guapo came through the screen and murdered me.
He did do that, yeah. It was weird. It was weird watching you die. I mean, we think Dustin and I would have gotten up and stopped him, but...
Yeah. You don't stop El Guapo.
No.
If we weren't busy falling for his spell, maybe.
Right.
Well, we were trying to sew ourselves some Amigos costumes, but he got in too fast for that to work. I know that, like, that's like the big climax of the movie is that they get back to Sendapoco and they find out the only talent the town has is sewing. It's
yes.
Like a sew Amigos costume. But what's great is in every shot of anybody in the Amigo costume is clearly either Chevy Chase Martin short or Steve Martin.
Yep.
It's never the actual townspeople. But then also, like, the only thing that happens is at one point... Like, the horses go into a mud puddle,
yeah,
and
like
all
they dig out like a ravine.
Leave.
Yeah.
Like, we can't stay. It's like a Simpsons where they have a bowl and nail in it. Like, can't stay there anymore.
It's still adios, El Guapo.
Yeah.
And, poor Jefe. El Guapo's just, is anybody still here? I am still here, El Guapo.
Bang! Yeah.
He killed him.
Yeah,
no, somebody shot him. One of the amigos.
Yeah, one of the amigos, one of the townspeople shot Jefe.
Right after he announced that he was. It was like that scene in Saving Private Ryan where the doctor saves a guy's life.
Okay,
and
I've seen that.
Yeah. And Jefe does like a WWE level sell. Like he backflips off the horse, springs up, fires his gun, and then face plants like goddamn Ric Flair.
That's the one thing. You know, racism aside, lack of the ball and rape culture aside, and the weird silliness in the middle, the most irresponsible thing about this film is how much they are promoting the concept of firing guns randomly in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a dangerous practice, and I think we should make sure we take a serious note and make sure your listeners know to not fire guns randomly in the air.
Yeah.
It might sound fun, but people do get killed from it.
Yeah, don't ever do that.
Yeah.
Not even if you're El Guapo and El Guapo's man.
Like I said, I live in L.A. now where Hollywood is.
Yeah.
And
the amigos were kicked out of.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. And that's one of the things where, in L.A., during, holidays now, they actually have, PSAs reminding you not to fire your gun in the air.
Please don't fire your guns. We don't want your bullets to fall and hit.
Was it
Marty Flugelman?
Yeah. Well, I remember on July 4th, I was at a friend's house, and her fiancé, desperately, was trying to get permission to fire his gun in the air. And she's like, no. He's like, go on, I'll fire. No one will know. The cops will think it's... I just want to fire my gun. The cops will think it's a fire. Like, he was, trying to convince her that it was okay.
No,
and she's like, no, I want to get married next year. I don't want you to be in jail.
Yeah.
And, I end up leaving. I'm like, I don't want to be here when that happens.
I thought that, I've gone to ranges, and shot, at friends' houses, out in the country away from everything.
Yeah.
Bullets are goddamn expensive.
Yeah,
that's
like, why would you ever use them on anything other than what guns are meant for or target practice? I'm gonna fire my gun in the air to celebrate. That's like $1 a bullet, you goon.
Or how many pesos would that be?
Well, I don't think the El Guapo gang is paying money for their.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Well,
it was a birthday present from the German.
Yeah, he probably bought the guns from the German, but I think the bullets he probably took from those priests at that mission.
Yeah.
Man.
Just a big old bullety mission.
I'm just saying, I'm not sure the El Guapo gang is the most fiscally responsible.
I will say this also to Three Amigos' credit, no whitewashing with the Mexican characters.
Yeah, that's true.
Which happens so much in movies.
Well,
nowadays.
I wasn't sure if it was or not because some of them you can't tell if it's just the guy having dirt on his face or if they horrifically rubbed brown makeup on somebody's face.
I think a good chunk. Well, and especially a lot of the names when the credits.
That's true.
Rolling,
that's true.
I think
anybody with a spoken line or a character definitely. I think some people.
Extras might have been.
Yeah,
they could have gone either.
I actually think they're recycling some of the same extras over and over again because there was a certain mustache that I feel like I was seeing on the village of Sendapoco and in that cantina scene and also in the gang in El Guapo's hideout.
Yeah. One of the other things that the silent film which we see the amigos in the very beginning.
Oh, that was great.
Where they are wearing just the creepiest fucking makeup.
Yeah, yeah.
They all look like they're in goddamn Cabinet of Dr. Caligari or something.
Yeah,
just pale.
It's
face.
Pretty standard though for those old silent films.
Yeah,
they did have all.
Yeah.
Have you seen Nosferatu?
But that's German expressionism. It makes sense to me. I don't feel like a...
But
even Birth of a Nation,
they have that in there. That's pretty standard. Because it was very theatrical.
Oh, yeah, that's
true.
Yeah. Kind of make it more pronounced. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I think to see it on, modern film, as opposed to see it, on old transfers where,
Yeah.
I don't think it pops as much.
Yeah.
So, it's just off-putting to see.
Yeah, I think like, almost every time. I took a History of World Cinema class, and I watched a bunch of like other like film things in college.
Yeah.
And we also, at work, once in a while, we have to do like old silent films. Like, I mean, it's funny. I do closed captioning, and once in a while, we'll get a silent film, and all we really do is put a music note up. Like,
yep.
The song is playing. And
just letter P for the entire thing.
Or we'll have to describe the music, which can be... horrific.
Parenthetical, Camp Town Races, and parenthetical.
Yeah, or like, well, sometimes, I did one time, I did like a 6-part Jewish epic called The Golem, and so it was a lot of variations on like folk music, like Jewish Hebrew folk music,
yeah.
Hebrew violin music, klezmer music. Like, it was all that kind of like very, like,
yeah. It's like, change it up. Like,
yeah.
That sounds
they
sad.
Don't know they're deaf.
Yeah, yeah.
That was mean of me.
Some people had hearing and then their hearing went away.
I guess.
Just remember it.
Yeah. How very ableist of you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Let's talk about while we're winding down. I want to talk about the three main actors and kind of the trajectory of their careers post this. Because obviously at this point, Chevy Chase, Martin Short, Steve Martin, all doing very well for themselves, all highly respected comedic actors. And then like. So, like, their careers from then on were kind of... Like, Steve Martin did pretty good for himself.
I would say Steve Martin for a significant period of time past this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say, like, really for me, I think movie-wise, the last thing I saw Steve Martin in that I really liked and I thought was really good was Bowfinger. And that was, like, 99-2000.
Yeah.
And through the 90s, he did some decent stuff. Like there was Father of the Bride. There was... I can't think of it. The one with
Father
him and Goldie Hawn.
Yeah, that was good.
Oh, yeah, Twitchers.
Martin Short was in both of those, wasn't he? Yeah. And then... No, not Out of Towns. There was one in the 90s with him and Goldie Hawn. I want to say House Sitter or something like that.
No, that's later. Oh, yeah.
But it's him and Goldie Hawn.
So I'm thinking of the one that's... I was thinking of Bringing Down the House, which is...
Yeah.
The
Gene Levy. I almost thought House Guest for a second, but that was Phil Hartman and Sinbad.
I think it is House Sitter. I think it's
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And then there was Leap of Faith, which is a very bizarre, but really, really interesting movie.
But it was one of those things that, like, it was kind of a blip. It was one of his non-comedy roles. Like, it was one of his
more
serious roles.
Yeah, but he's very good in it.
The thing is, like, I think you're discounting, like... I'm not saying that we liked it and it wasn't for us, but the first Pink Panther remake was a huge hit. That was the last movie of his, I think, that was probably a really big hit.
Me and my friend Joey, this is the same friend of mine that loves Clifford as much as I do.
Yeah.
Oh, Clifford.
And who loves the Mr. Bean movie.
Mm-hmm.
We watched the Pink Panther because we liked watching bad movies.
Yeah.
But, like, and we didn't, like, we weren't really super crazy about it, but for whatever reason, we thought Steve Martin saying hamburger
that
over and over was the funniest fucking thing
that
in the world.
That was the thing that in the trailer, I let a lot of people say that was just funny.
It's like, hamburger,
Well, the thing is, I think we were having the argument during the movie about whose career is... It ended up being the best out of all of them, and you were kind of pushing more for Short having longevity. But I think Short, even today, I think his more popular stuff has always had nothing more than a cult following.
Yeah,
whereas like Steve Martin, Martin can still do something now that has some mainstream success.
Yeah,
whereas
that's
Martin Short is always like. He's like Jiminy Glick is really popular, and he was great on Arrested Development. But like, even that show has a cult following.
Yeah, exactly.
Like 30 Rock, which Steve Martin was on and was great on, has at least
a mainstream.
And Steve Martin's also just spread his net so wide.
Yeah, that's very true.
Like
and there's bound to be some.
I really wanted to talk about Shop Girl.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm talking about Shop Girl.
I don't have much about it. I just feel like I like when comedic actors take a more serious
role.
Yeah, and I think the Shop Girl was really well done. And then didn't Steve Martin also start writing more like novels?
Well, he wrote Shop Girl.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Because
originally they actually were going to have Tom Hanks play the character Steve Martin played in the movie.
Yeah.
And then I think Tom Hanks had a fallout and they had Steve Martin play instead. But
yeah.
It was a good choice.
Yeah, I think he's still going to be. I don't think we've seen the last of Steve Martin.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And I still like him. And I want to say, like, every time he pops in for an SNL cameo, he's hilarious.
Yeah.
So, like, he's still, like, is very funny.
Yeah.
He's, like, I feel like he's not doing a lot, like, of output.
I think what's happening is the thing that Steve Martin was most known for, like, his genre of comedy, is kind of not the current, like,
comedy. Now, yeah.
So I think it's harder for him. I think because he's so much older, like, it's not like Bill Murray, where Bill Murray kind of morphed into this newer,
like,
sadder
Bill Murray. The Wes Anderson Bill Murray.
Yeah.
I think you're also forgetting about Chevy Chase.
And Chevy Chase, like, that's more of a pro, because I think Steve Martin has weathered.
Yeah.
Like, and Martin Short as well. Like,
yeah.
Whereas Chevy Chase, like, has had, like, the golden opportunity with Community to, like, and, like, he had, like, this kind of comeback. And then he was just a gigantic fucking asshole.
I think that he's kind of become like a grumpy old man.
Well, the thing is, he's famously known for being impossible to work with in almost everything. Yeah.
Right.
The thing I want to mention before I forget it, while we're talking about SNL and these three actors specifically, there was an episode last season. It was Justin Timberlake's fifth episode. Uh-huh. And they had, like, all of, like, they had, like, Tom Hanks popped in.
Like,
Martin Short, Steve Martin, Chevy Chase popped in.
Yeah, and Martin Short was so excited.
Yeah. And Martin Short was so excited to be there. Steve Martin was having a good time. And Chevy Chase was looked fucking miserable.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he was so over. I was like, fuck you,
man. Yeah, just somebody who's...
How can you be, like, on that show, on that stage, and not be, like, just thrilled?
Well, because he left the show... After the first season. And like, he basically, when he came back to host it, he was a dick to Lorne then.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he just doesn't appreciate anything. And he has an ego issue. Like, and that's always been his problem.
Yeah.
And then he also just kept making bad movies. Like,
all
Cox
terrible.
And Robertson's. And just, there's so many embarrassing. And the thing is, it sucks because when they used him right and he had.
It was great.
God, there's not a much funnier movie than the first Fletch. I even liked Fletch too, and I mean we talked about off mic. We talked about the vacation movies.
Yeah, the vacation movies. Caddyshack is so good in too.
Yeah,
and like, and we did Dirty Work with Travis Irvine, and we talked about that. And like he is misfiring on all cylinders in that movie. Like, and it's such a funny premise for a character, like just like this compulsive gambler
doctor.
At one of the points, like, you find out one of the bets that he fluked was betting against Rocky and Rocky III. Like, and that's such a funny thing, but like in the hands of like Chevy Chase and that character, like, it just
if he had tried,
hit.
If he had given
the
effort,
like,
at all,
he was clearly collecting
a literally
paycheck.
Paid it as fine. I'm Chevy Chase, and like, if anybody else but Chevy Chase had been in that part, it might have been better. And it was only because he's Chevy Chase. He's like, I don't need to work.
It's
on
like
this
like,
at all,
every, like, you know? Norm Macdonald gave his all, like, and even when Norm Macdonald's a guy that when he gives his all, unless you're familiar with Norm Macdonald, you can't tell that he's giving his all.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but he's so good. Like, Jack Warden is great as the dead. Christopher McDonald is always good as, like, those kind of douchebag villains. And, like, Chris Farley. Like, he has three scenes in the whole
movie.
And he knocks him out of the... Almost Heroes is his last movie.
Last movie he filmed, but actually Dirty Work came out after Almost Heroes.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I love both. I think they're both highly underrated comedies.
I think Almost Heroes is definitely underrated. I think that everybody kind of inappropriate, like, unfairly compared it to the David Spade movie.
Yeah.
It's not the same kind of movie.
Yeah, like, it's... Oh, God. And Eugene Levy is so funny in that movie, too. Like, and that's another one, like, kind of in the vein of, like, talking about, like, great comedic actors, like kind of their stuff. Like, Eugene Levy is one of those ones.
I do really like him.
He's so good. And then, like, he's in, like, just...
Well,
the problem with Eugene
Levy, I think, is that... His greatness is in stuff like Christopher Guest movies.
Yeah.
But I don't think they make that much money for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he has to kind of say yes to everything.
Yeah. No, and I
get
it.
He's not a guy who can draw down like a $20 million paycheck.
Yeah, he's not
Brad Pitt
or Jim Carrey.
Yeah, where he... So, I like... And then he hit American Pie, and that became
like a
bread.
He's
like, fuck it, I keep doing these. But then, but same thing, like, when you're doing The Man with him and Samuel Jackson. And I when that movie came out, I go, why are you guys both in this? But I imagine that for Levy, he's probably like, look, I don't get offered starring roles that often.
Yeah.
I kind of have to take one when I
get
it.
No, I get it.
It's unfortunate.
I know. I think on this podcast, we've talked about movies in the past, like, where, like, we looked at some of them and, like, just... Why was anyone in this movie? And then every time I'm like, if I were in this person's shoes and somebody said, hey, I'll pay you $1 million to be in Doom with The Rock, I would agree to be in Doom with The Rock.
Yeah. Well, when you think about it, like, that's the thing where there's so many actors who you think actually might be kind of funny, but then they just made that wrong movie. Like,
like
Jimmy Fallon is not a great actor, but he's a funny comedian.
He's
good
a funny guy.
Whatever.
I think he's a lead.
I think he's found his niche as the host.
Absolutely.
But
because I hated him before he started
his
hosting.
His first foray into movies was that awful Taxi remake.
Yep.
Like, hey, let's pair Jimmy Fallon up with Queen Latifah.
Yeah, like,
oh. If you ever read the chapters in their book, Tom Lennon and Barbara Van Garen's book, about how that movie changed over the course of them having to write it and how...
They wrote that?
Yeah, but they didn't write, like, they were writing a movie that was more of a remake of the actual French movie. They flown to Luc Besson's, like, villa and are hanging out. And then that's a whole section, there's a whole section in the book about how you, like, they wrote it, but they weren't the only writers on it.
Yeah.
And the thing is, that's true most of those movies where, I'm digressing a lot right now, but...
Yeah. No, this is fine. This is fine.
It's a thing where, like, usually when you see that kind of movie, like, oh, how did this even get made? And who are these guys? You don't realize, like, probably 20 people wrote that script.
Yeah, absolutely.
But contractually, the ones who, like, get named are people who either, like, had a certain deal already or whatever. Because your name being on the script means a lot more for what you make off the payments. So
exactly.
There's, like, a rallying for it. And a lot of these, like, the movies they're writing, like, that, and they wrote Night at the Museum, and they wrote The Pacifier, which was supposed to be for Jackie Chan, and it became a Vin Diesel movie. So, yeah, it's a whole thing about how... And they go...
Balls of Fury as well.
They go with the grit. Well, but that's their own. Like, that's their own movie.
Oh, I know.
But,
that makes me so sad, because it's so terrible.
But they also...
And
they go
so
into,
funny.
They go into huge detail in that script about all the things that went wrong from start to finish.
Yeah.
The writing and the filming and the production of Herbie Fully Loaded, and like the idea of like what the story was when they pitched it, when they sold it to the executive who loved it, and then how that executive had one assistant who tried to make it like their pet project and just ruined the movie there on out, and it's like crazy. And then at the end of that book, they have the entire script for what would have been the Reno 911 sequel if they
did the movie. So. Well, I love it too, because like I always think about movies in terms of that, especially when people that I love do terrible things, and then I always remind myself, like, you know what, Daniel Day-Lewis is in a garbage movie every now and then too. So like, I've gotten this argument with so many people, whereas like everyone has done at least one terrible dog shit.
The thing you have to look at is Michael
Caine
is the best example of it in the world, because he was not there to receive his Oscar. Because he was on set for Jaws 4. And then years later, when he won a second Oscar for The Cider House Rules, he said, I did Jaws 4 so that I could do this movie.
Yep.
You know, and think about whatever crappy movie Bruce Willis probably made so that he could do Pulp Fiction. Because Pulp Fiction paid scale when he wasn't going to make any money off of it, but he loved that script so much that he probably did like Hudson Hawk or something
just to pay for that
movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think the trick is that you got to make sure you don't make it a movie where it's like your tent pole, like, if this movie doesn't hit, then I'm not a star kind of thing.
I think
that's what happens to people.
I think you posted this the other day, I think. It might have been, like, Kurt Brownell or something, where somebody's saying something basically about, like, every time you see, like, a garbage movie, like, think about the people who were involved in it. Like,
well, that was Mike Lawrence that posted that.
Yeah, Mike Lawrence, that's who it was.
I remember because it's the only positive thing he's ever posted in history of high school.
But it was like I saw them and I was like, yeah, like, you know what, shitty movies are fun, but like, what's the harm in them?
They're
not hurting anyone. Like, it's not like you cannot watch it, but like somebody like got paid for that. Like, somebody was able to make their rent and pay their bills and support their family. Some people might have even had a good time on that movie.
It was somebody's. Being in the industry, I get a little bit sick of hearing other people in the industry be like, how did they make that movie and why would they do that and stuff like that. Because, well, it's like, well, don't you know how hard this business is? Like, maybe you should be happy people that are working, because if things are successful, then they'll make more of them and then you can make money and you can have a career.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's like, yeah, I mean, you need to pick some better choices at some point. And if you get to a point where you can say no to stuff, it's great. But some people don't have the ability to say no.
Yeah.
You know, they have to work whatever they're doing.
I love watching shitty movies, though, so...
Like, it's fun. Like, there's definitely, like, a line that they have to walk.
Yeah.
But, like, I own the Stallone Judge Dredd. Because it's so fun, and it's so, like, it's so cheesy.
I love that movie. Like, I knew I wasn't supposed to, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, like, Rob Schneider makes no sense being in it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Like,
I am the law.
Like, yeah. Like,
and there's that robot, like, the agency robot, and then, like, the Chief Justice, like, when he's, like, he opens a door, and there's, like, a vast wasteland outside of the city.
Oh, is that all that's keeping the mutants from in here? Is just the set of French doors?
Yeah.
Like, as a comic book fan, I hate that movie. But like, as a movie lover, like, it's fun, and I like Stallone, and I like mindless action.
I know this is like the most digressing podcast of all time.
No,
but I get so angry at comic book fans who complain about the movie.
Yeah.
And I want to go, it's not for you.
Right.
Like, I get it. They're happy that you like the book and that you want to see a movie based on your comic book.
Yeah.
But the thing is, they don't need to sell it to you because you already like the comic.
Yeah.
They're making the movie.
You're going to go see
and
it.
And what's funny about that is that everybody gets on that thing. But my example right now that I've been going to a lot, because I'm actually becoming a lot more remake tolerant than I used to be.
Yeah, same.
Because I realize how many movies over the course of my life have been remakes. So I feel like the phrase, Hollywood only makes remakes, is hackier now than making a remake.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you know how many Dracula movies were made before?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how many Three Musketeers kind of movies?
Hammer built an entire franchise and empire around remaking monster movies.
Yeah, so then, okay. So the one right now, it's like my thing is like if everybody didn't go see the remakes, they wouldn't make them.
Yeah,
so it's actually our fault
that
they
absolutely
make remakes. And the thing is, so if you get pissed off but you go see it anyway,
right,
they're gonna make more of them.
Yeah.
Right.
The fact that Transformers 2 made $500 million
that's
why there's Transformers 3
right.
and there's gonna be a fourth one.
Yeah.
Right.
So then the one that my high horse right now is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles because
I've talked about this a couple of times.
Because the cartoon has no integrity.
No.
So to get mad that the movie is not going to be like the cartoon is the dumbest thing to be mad about in the world.
Yeah.
Because that cartoon was a bastardization of an adult themed comic book that
yes.
they made to sell. And by the way, I love the cartoon.
Yeah,
I love the Henson Monster Studio live action movie.
Yeah, the first
live
action movie.
They're all
good.
Fun, and I like the and I liked the cartoon. But when people get mad that the new movie's not going to like the cartoon, and also what's funny about it is that when last year Michael Bay was talking about making the origin of the Turtles be extraterrestrial, people lost their shit.
Yeah.
When that's accurate to the source material.
Yeah.
But now when they release the new information, they're going, now they're going to make it so that Shredder and April's dad develop the same. People are like, oh, they're changing him. Like, they're changing it because you asked them to.
Yeah.
You guys threw a shit fit when they announced that, and they're changing it, and now you're mad they didn't change it in a way that makes you happy. It's like, this isn't...
Yeah,
way,
that's
it's
not how it
for
works.
You, by the way. It's for the kids nowadays.
Yeah.
But almost every single Turtle's incarnation has been different and made something
Yeah, they've been
story.
Reinvented. Every,
so the idea
like
of being
cartoons,
mad
though.
About them not having be exactly the same, it's like, that's why are you wasting that energy,
yeah,
and why are you filling up my Facebook feed with that shit?
I think the only reason I like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is because it's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's... Why would you... Yeah, like you
How
said, why would
you... come from outer space? I don't know. Maybe because the ooze came from outer space?
Right.
Yeah.
In the comics?
Maybe because
TCR
it's a fucking ridiculous story to
begin
yeah,
with.
Yeah, it's about...
Yeah, yeah.
Turtles who are ninjas and eat pizza.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just enjoy your turtles already.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's like my example lately is I always go to the RoboCop remake that came out a few months ago.
Yeah.
RoboCop is one of my absolute favorite movies of all time.
Yes.
I love it so much. And
it's
like
a good one.
And I went and saw the remake and I think it was very good. Like there were parts of it that I liked.
Yeah.
Like I thought Michael Keaton was great in it. There were a couple of things that they were trying to do, but like on the whole, I didn't like it.
Yeah,
I didn't make a big shit fit about it because at the it's just like people get pissed about the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah, yeah.
Like people tell me about like the Red Letter Media reviews, and I'm like, oh yeah, it's really fun. I was like, look, man, I can't listen to people make fun of the prequels anymore.
Yeah.
I'm over it. I'm exhausted.
And we all get
I
it.
Own the prequels.
We get
like,
it.
They're not good, but I still enjoy
and
the
you
series.
Know, imagine the Sith is an enjoyable film to watch.
Yeah.
I don't think it's terrible.
Yeah,
I think that the first and second one could have been better made, but like,
yeah,
I mean,
like Phantom Menace, yeah, it's not good, but you get that badass lightsaber fight.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end. Like, and there's little
and
things
same
that
the Attack of the Clones, that lightsaber fight at the end of that movie's fun to watch.
Yeah, like
know?
There are things that make it worth it. And like my whole thing is, at the end of the day, it doesn't make the original RoboCop or
That's
Empire
what
Strikes
crazy.
Back any
yeah.
less good.
Like it's not like
yeah.
RoboCop.
Like,
the
oh,
remake,
you're raping
rounded.
My childhood.
I hate that phrase so much.
Yes, it's the worst.
That's why
stop
when the whole
appropriating
when the,
that phrase for something it's not.
When the whole
more.
Thing happened, when the whole not to make light of the Bryan Singer allegations, but that was my joke about it. Was that's what. That I go all that Bryan Singer did was what his fans have been accusing him of for a decade.
Yeah,
like, it's
yeah.
like that's it's such a ridiculous thing to say. You raped my childhood, really? If the worst thing about your childhood is that 20 years later something made a bad movie, you had a pretty fucking great childhood.
Yeah,
right,
and
right.
how dare you imply that you were raped because of it?
Yeah,
like, what
right.
an asshole yeah. you are!
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, the thing with so I didn't see RoboCop because I didn't give a shit. Like
yeah.
I will watch it on HBO. I'll be fine to watch it there. I didn't need to go see it in the theater.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though it was Michael Keaton, and I love Michael Keaton. I didn't see the Karate Kid remake because you know why?
Why?
I love the first Karate Kid.
Yeah,
right. I don't need to see it.
Yeah.
It's not for me. I'm not a kid in the Jaden Smith.
Yeah, you're not Jaden Smith's demo.
Yeah, yeah. Which is nobody.
You don't fall, into his
as evidenced by the box office of After Earth.
Yes.
His bold marketing strategy of being completely uncharismatic and not uninterested in being on screen.
Really. I don't know.
Yeah, to me, it's like, you know, it's even like when, and I was on Team Conan hardcore when the whole Conan and Leno thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it's like, you know, it's hard to be like, hey, all these guys who work for Leno they don't need to be out of work either. You know,
even
the last season of Scrubs, Bill Lawrence said that about how everybody said they should have ended the show a season earlier, not had that awful med school season. But Bill Lawrence was like, yeah, but how do you tell a whole staff full of crew and writer and like team of showmakers, like, hey, you guys can't have a job this year because we just thought the show's running its course? I mean, I know that's part of the business and it's part of the industry. You are supposed to expect that to happen.
Yeah.
But it's like, shows get canceled all the time where you can't control it. So if you have the ability to make another season of a show, it's like, can we just do it?
I'm about to say, I imagine Judd Apatow would keep making seasons of a show anymore because like he just hasn't fared well.
Yeah.
So like, I totally get it. Like, oh hey, do you want to make another season?
Yeah.
Yes, I would like to be able to pay my friends and the people that have worked really hard on this.
Yeah.
So yes, I would.
I don't like that last season of Scrubs. But for me, it's like they had such a great finale before where JD was leaving and they had like him looking at like, I can end Scrubs there on my.
Exactly.
I don't need to watch. I don't. That last season doesn't take it away from me.
Yeah.
You know?
That is a good point. But back to El Guapo.
It was a separate podcast we just had.
I was really hoping in the birthday scene again. That's what really the birthday scene. What had it for me? The singing animals.
Yeah.
So they kept bringing in all the piñatas.
Yeah.
And they brought in a giant horse, and I was really hoping the three amigos would really, like, Trojan horse.
Oh,
yes.
That
would have.
I do love that Ned is hanging from the rope, and he's there
for,
entire time. Like, he's like, and like, literally, it's just his feet are against the pinata. Somehow he's
right.
Like a foothold that keeps him in one spot.
And his arms don't give out.
Yeah. It's so accurate.
He works that up.
Yeah.
So Lauren Beck has his three favorite things over the course of this podcast, counting down. Number three, the birthday party in Three Amigos.
Yes.
Number two, bitches leave RoboCop.
Wait, what?
I think is almost everyone's favorite moment from that movie.
I do love RoboCop since you made me watch it.
Since I gave you the opportunity to have it introduced in your life.
All right.
And of course, your number one favorite moment from Ghostbusters 2.
A child!
Before we wrap it up, going back to RoboCop, the funny thing about that remake is they had an interview with Peter Weller about, and he like went on this whole rant about why you shouldn't remake movies and how perfect they are and stuff. Meanwhile, the whole time he's talking about it, he's standing in front of the background for Star Trek
yeah.
In the Darkness. he then even, like, he realizes what he's been saying. But, like, this movie, and it's how great this movie he's in is. And all I mean, that movie that basically is takes the character in Wrath of Khan and remade him, you mean that character? Like, that movie, he made him white?
It's like, just change the guy's name.
Yeah.
Like, just make it not an Indian name.
Yeah, make him one of the other people.
Do you
want to
cast an attractive British dude? Fine. Don't give him a fucking Indian.
Yeah, oh god. But anyway, I just think it's the whole time he's talking and I see those things in the background. I'm like, you mean like Star Trek in the Darkness?
Yeah.
You mean those kind of remakes? That reboot? What? What's that? Yeah.
God. Honestly, I wouldn't say that Star Trek Into Darkness is a worse remake than the RoboCop remake, but it's not. Like, I was so conflicted.
Dan Swartout said it best about both that one and the other Star Trek. Is that as space action movies, they're great.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely
fantastic space action movies.
Mm-hmm.
As Star Trek movies and Star Trek stories, they don't work because Star Trek's not at its core an action series.
No, absolutely
it's
not.
It's a series about exploration and drama with
the
characters. And he goes, and that's why we think that actually he might be better suited for Star Wars than he is for Star Trek.
Yeah, definitely.
Because Star Wars is an adventure action
story.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so that, like,
Star Trek is so much more philosophical, like, in its approach to everything, too.
Yeah.
And also, I just fucking love Wrath of Khan so much. Wrath of Khan is so good.
Yeah. But bring this all together for Three Amigos, if you like Star Trek and you like Three Amigos, you should see Galaxy Quest.
Yes! Absolutely. That
especially because Sam Rockwell is so great.
Oh, everyone is great.
Yeah.
That's actually, that episode has already been scheduled. That's going to be happening in the next month or so I'm pretty excited. Because that's such a great movie. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Cool. So we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. I think we've talked a good amount about Three Amigos and also literally everything else.
Rice Silverman, the great digressor.
No, that's part of why I do this, so we can talk about other shit too.
Well, that way somebody who has not seen Three Amigos is not just hearing us talk about how funny scenes were.
Exactly.
And they haven't seen.
Yeah.
If they had not already fast-forwarded into that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, maybe they'll talk about Ninja Turtles.
Oh,
you're in luck today.
You're going to get hate mail from somebody who is mad about the remake, and they're like, fuck you, they're already my childhood. And you guys just break my ears.
I've only gotten two emails for the podcast so far, so I don't think it'll be over Ninja Turtles.
Was it iTunes saying your podcast now listed on iTunes?
No, it was actually legit ones. It was somebody asking if I would do... if I was ever going to do the movie Ronin at some point.
Nice.
Which I actually probably will, because that's a really good movie.
Yeah.
And then another was a guy asking to come out to the live podcast we did for Ghostbusters a few weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
Those have been my emails over the course of 3 months running this. So, cool. Thanks, Rye.
Thanks for having me.
Lauren, thank you again as well.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Whenever movies are being not watched, we'll be there. Whenever a film is unappreciated... You'll find us.
I'll be asleep on the couch.
Yeah. That's the thing. She basically fell asleep when the birthday scene was over. Scene was where it was
she
at.
She got what she wanted.
I got what I wanted.
I saw the sweater, saw the plethora exchange, saw the pinatas.
This movie did not open its petals for her, so she just killed it.
Yep.
There it is.
That's the perfect way to put it.
All right. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time.